During the break, at least one person asked me a question about parsing issues. Now, what happens is on some of the midterms, parsing is included, and in others, it's pushed back until the final. And the reason for that is in various years, it's a question of how quickly the material gets taught. Sometimes I don't have time to finish parsing before midterm time. This year, things went faster, and I did. So he had some questions about LL and LALR and all that stuff. And rather than just answer it for that one person, I suspect some of you others may be at least vaguely interested in it. It certainly is possible that the midterm will have parsing questions. And some of them are of things. Here's a little grammar. Is this, typically I ask, is it LL? I also ask, is it LAR? So before we get into the one the person was asking about, let me just give you a couple of overall observations that you can use. It sometimes happens that one of the grammars I'll give you is ambiguous. Remember, ambiguous means that it's possible to have the same string generated more than one way. If a string is if a grammar is ambiguous, it's never going to be LL, nor is it ever going to be LALR. So, for example, there was one, and maybe you'll bring that one up, where I had something like S goes to AS blah, 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 and A could go to lambda. This is not the exact, but it's very close. And it turns out that these particular constructs turn out to be ambiguous because, notice, I can use the first production to put down some number of A's, and then the A's disappear. So functionally, it's impossible after the fact to say, did this guy use this one time, two times, three times, many times, and how many lambdas should I guess? Because remember, lambdas are invisible, so they're particularly nasty to match in any event. So this is ambiguous, and you can, if you want to, simply run the construction mechanism, and it'll end up telling you that. So in this particular case, if S, for example, went to B, it's a situation there that, notice that if all the A's goes to lambda, S can be predicted by B on the first production and also on the second, and that would be a predict conflict anyway. But if you see an ambiguity and you can point it out, it means exactly the same string has two or more distinct derivations. Then you can say, hey, this is ambiguous. It's neither LL nor LLR, period. Don't need to do any construction. There's another proof that says if something is LLR, that implies it's also LL. Turns out there's actually a couple of really weird grammars that's not true. I'm sorry, the other way around. If it's LL, it's also LALR. I'm glad somebody looked befuddled other than me. And the reason for that is that LL does a simpler test, and the test is embedded in the logic of LALR. So in that particular case, if you've shown that it's LL, you say, oh, it's also, by the way, going to be LALR. Again, there are a couple of really weird grammars that nobody would ever dream of using that show that's not 1,000% true. But for our purposes, they're unimportant enough that we can ignore it. So knowing those two things, that ambiguity says neither, and knowing it's LL, which is a simpler technique, means it's also going to be able to more powerful technique, that'll save you some time. If you went ahead and did the construction, it would tell you the same thing. It would just take more effort. So that as just prelude, who was the person that had the question? Yeah, the Baron. Was there an exam that you had a grammar on that I can bring up? Okay, let's bring one up, though. And which was the midterm that had a grammar question on it? Does anybody remember? Oh, both of them. Okay. Yeah, this is just the sort of thing that I was thinking about. So, three different ones. And, of course, you can't absolutely be guaranteed on this, but it's usually the case that instructors being the way they are, that there's going to be a different answer for each one of them. You know, it's like there's going to be some where it's both, maybe one where it's one and not the other, and maybe another where it's neither. Now, that's not a guarantee. I may decide to get super tricky, but, you know, just... That, if you try to psych people out, that's a way of doing it. So let's look at the first one there, and I'll copy it onto my paper here. So this one is pretty straightforward. What's happening here is I'm using the L to disguise what would have been a common prefix problem. Remember that for LL, there were two issues that typically would destroy the ability to use the LL technique. One of them would be a common prefix, and without the L's, that's exactly what I would have there. S would go to AB or AC. But since L goes to lambda, having the L there doesn't prove anything. It's just a placeholder which effectively could be removed. So this has a prediction problem, so it's certainly not LL. And it turns out that it's also not ambiguous since there's exactly two different derivations, namely use the top production and L goes to lambda, or use the second production and L goes to lambda. So ambiguity is not going to help you. The remaining question is it LLR? So the question is, how do I figure it out? And one of the negatives of LLR is it's more mechanical. LL had this beautiful theory that says predict sets have to be unique for each production with a common left-hand side, and that's enough. That's all it is. But for something like LLR, and if you read the textbook, there's related ones, SLR and full LR and lots of other ones that people invented later. It's more or less like designing an airplane. And in the old days, you design an airplane, and then you find somebody who's very brave or very stupid and tell them to go fly it. And I don't know if you ever seen some of those old videos, not videos, but old films. There was right around the times of the Wright brothers, who were very poor and very underfunded. There was a big project funded by the United States government for an airplane. And does anybody remember the name of the guy that was doing it? It was very well funded. And they have a great video of the guy on a little platform with a catapult. And it shoots it off the plane, off the catapult. It goes about 3 feet straight down, and there goes the whole project. So, I mean, it's a situation there that in those days, the only way you knew if something would fly or not is give it a try. Interestingly, thanks to folks like you, it's turned around completely. For example, Boeing, which of course makes airplanes, is now in the stage where they don't even do wind tunnels anymore. Their entire design process is all digital, all computer. And, for example, the 777, which is one of their more recent successes, never did a wind tunnel on it. They, of course, still did test flying, but in this case, they had greater reason to believe the thing would work. So thanks to computer people like you, you know, you don't need wind tunnels anymore. But in this case, the analogy is, how do you figure if it's LL or not? Build a parser and see if the parser succeeds or fails. How does it fail? As I'm going along, I either get a shift-reduce or reduce-reduce conflict that's not resolvable. That's exactly what the constructor does. So it's exactly the same as shoot it off the deck and see if it flies or it sings. Fortunately, I'm giving you easy enough grammars that it's not tedious of having to do dozens of states by hand and maybe do a clerical error. That's why we have computers to do the real generation, so it doesn't make silly errors. But let's look at this. Remember, the rule was to build a parser, you start with the start state, which is all the start productions with a dot at the extreme left. And since you have a lambda production, you put the dot at the extreme right. So this wants to do a reduce of lambda. But notice all it's trying to shift is a non-terminal, which is not a real terminal. So there's no conflict because conflicts are on a terminal symbol. So it says, okay, this thing is valid. I then progress to that wants to do shift, but it doesn't want to do any reduce. There's no such thing as a shift-shift conflict. Those are the things we can handle. So this guy is not unhappy. It progresses one stage further. And now it's the case that shifts go to either one item or another. Whenever you go to a state that has exactly one item with dot in it, you don't need to trace it any further because there can't be any conflicts. The only way it's not LLR is if there's a shift-reduce or reduce-reduce between two different productions. If there's only one in there, it's a winner. It's like elections, you know, where there's only one candidate. I'm a little older than most of you, and isn't that a big surprise? But one of the cool things used to be that back when the Soviet Union was in operation, they'd have elections. And it'd be a situation, what do you do when you're a dictator and there's only one guy that's going to win? What they did is they have little sham parties. And what would happen is the Communist Party representative would win 10,375,000 blah, blah, blah. And there'd be some other party, you know, that was the sham opposition, would get 375 votes. And they said, right, you know, out of a huge country like that, 375 votes. But it was always, must have been tough on those guys to get enough votes so it doesn't look totally ridiculous, but not so many that it looks like there's real opposition. After all, if you said the Communist Party got 10 million and the opposition got 9 million, oh, that doesn't look so good. That means that maybe, you know, you're falling out of favor. So same thing here, you know, situation. When we get a singleton item, we really do know who's going to win, and we don't have to worry about explaining it to the public. So the answer in that one is, yes, this is LALR. That's question one. Let's go into parts B and C. Oh, yeah, sure. It doesn't fail. It succeeds. Oh, it only fails on the S. Remember, you have to have two or more productions that have the same predictor. No, then it'd be fine. Yeah. In fact, what happens is, the reason I put this in here is, in the old days of building parsers, you didn't have this notion of having these action symbols. You have this notion of embedded code. So what you would do is, if you wanted to do something at a particular place in a grammar, what you would do is you'd put a magic lambda production that would get triggered, and when that thing got triggered, it would trigger an action. So you'd say, whenever I predict L goes to lambda, do something. And in that particular case, as long as the lambda production did not screw up parsability, that was a big plus. So you can imagine in this particular case that it says, okay, I'm getting ready to predict to match the right-hand side. And just to carry your answer, if for example, this was BA, now what would happen is to say, L goes away because it's lambda. I see a B production one, I see an A production two, no problemo. And it would go. So it's always, again, the problem with LL is it has to know its decision early at the very left end. LALR, as this one showed, can delay. And there are cases where, for example, with the if-then-L situation, where we could dig ourselves in deeper and deeper until we were able to figure out if something had an else or not. The trouble with the if-then-else was it was inherently ambiguous. But if we had changed the grammar a tad to remove the ambiguity, LALR would have handled it beautifully, but LL would still have the problem, hey, these both begin with if. I can't tell which of the two is the one I really want. So, oh, that's right, we want to go to the other two questions, and let's keep this guy alive. So let's see if in the situation here where this is going to be the case where, first again, is it LL? And we ask the question here, what predicts the second production? Well, clearly a B. If I see a B, that's going to predict that production. It says, what predicts the first production? Well, L goes to lambda, so forget about him effectively. What can S generate? Hey, it can generate a B. So again, this is a case of a hidden left recursion. I showed you previously a hidden common prefix. Since L goes to lambda, this is really S goes to SA. That's left recursion. Left recursion is never going to be LL. So the answer is no, this is not LL. But again, is it the case that this might be able to be parsed using LLR? Well, again, we'll... So in this case, we have a potential shift-reduce conflict. So we say, this thing wants to reduce immediately. This guy wants to shift to B. So the question is it the case that B can follow an L? If you look at this particular case, the answer is yes, it can. So this is not LALR either. Again, why? Well, Here's the reduce. And it says reduce if the next terminal symbol is anything that can follow an L. What follows an L is an S, and an S generates a B. So reduce if you see a B. But obviously, I'm predicting a B, and I want to shift that guy too. So notice the notion here, just informally. And now that we know it's not LLR, the question is what went wrong? Sort of, what do you call it here when you have a debacle and you have to go and have a little meeting about what went wrong? What's the term they use? There's something else, not root cause analysis. Something where the bigwigs come in and decide, okay, root cause analysis is fine, let's do that. So notice what's going to happen here is this is going to generate as many capital L's when I use this top guy as it does little A's. And it seems like maybe that's enough to tell. But the problem here is that I've got to make a decision about matching L's before I ever get a chance to count the number of A's in effect. So I don't know how many A's are here, so I don't know how many L's to predict to match it up. So because these guys are disappearing and there's no way of handling them immediately, it messes up the parse. It's just not going to work. And again, as a general rule, Lambda productions, although very useful, also make parsing a little more difficult, particularly LALR parsing, because the strength of LALR is to delay. I would like to delay until I start matching these A's, but I can't because I got to say L goes to Lambda and I got to decide that now. So if, for example, I really wanted something like this, I would probably just get rid of those Lambdas and that might fix it. One of the questions I had yesterday was, is it valid to change the grammar? The answer is yes, it is if you're trying to build a parser for a language, but it's not valid in the case I give you a question. I say, is this grammar good or bad? Just like saying, is this particular program good or bad? It may be bad, but there may be a good program that you can get from it by doing the fixing. So it's a very different question. You get paid for doing good programs, not programs which could be changed into good programs. And similar here. If I ask you about a grammar, don't change it. Even though there's a simpler grammar that would probably work. It's probably the reason I wrote the way I did was to see if you understood what the liability of that particular construct was. So in this case, the answer was no and no, and let's find one more. I guess it was on a Lambda kick the day I wrote that thing, or maybe what it was, I finally figured out how to do a Lambda on this particular text editor, and I figured if I got one of them, I'm going to get my money's worth out of it. So in this particular case, it's a situation, what predicts the first production? So in this case, L goes to Lambda, so I see an A, there's a B, no problem predicting. So it is LL, and if it's LL, then you're fine, and it's also going to be LALR. So that wasn't so bad, as long as there are only a couple or three productions. Any other questions about, I mean, this is just a sample of a question I could answer. There's other varieties you might want to. What I'll do tomorrow is when I come in for the few of you who are taking the thing, I'll try to arrive a bit early for any last minute questions. So, and maybe not so last minute question, okay. All I would do in that one is say production one is predicted by A, production two is predicted by B. It's the only production that has a choice. Unique predictors, no, and that's the LL definition. So no deeper than that. That's the cool thing about LL is that it's easy to understand. It's easy to see it's got to work. LLR, because it's a little bit more cumbersome, is harder to understand, but the extra power is valuable enough that people do want to use it.
So if we're talking about LALR, would we just be able to just describe why it's not LALR, and in any case where it's not?
Yeah, all you have to do is find one failure point.
Yeah, and then so if it's not, or if it is LALR, should we just say there are no failure points?
Well, you'd probably want to show, you know, cases where there was a choice and why there was not a problem. Otherwise, you're just sort of guessing in a situation, and 50-50 chance, is it or isn't it? Other questions about parsing? Anybody want to do more grammars? Or, I mean, it gets boring after a while, but we can do them more. Other related questions on scanning, parsing, whatever, old exams? Oh, yeah, let me bring it up just so people can see it. That was the fall of what?
2012.
Okay. And that was one of the later questions, was it?
I think it was actually the last one.
Yeah, I think you're right. So that's 6B, right?
Yep.
Again, people think this is remarkably difficult, and it's one of the easiest questions you're ever likely to see, at least for me. Because, remember, think of it in terms of automata. An automaton, essentially, how do you turn an automaton into a yes man? Is that really that's what you're doing? Is whatever you ask it, it says yes. So you know, if you can figure out, get yourself a supervisor who does that, you're probably okay. Can I take off early? Yes, situation there. Yeah. Can I get a pay raise? Yes, and all, and on and on. But basically, what happens here is, think of the alternative. How could it not accept something? Well, it could be in a non-final state. So make all the states final. Remember, if it's a non-final state and I can get there, non-final state means reject. There's also this rule that if you don't have a transition somewhere, you don't show it. It's just sort of just implicit that if you don't want to have a transition to somewhere, you leave it blank. So that means every state has to have a transition under every possible character. So those are your two criteria. Every state's got to be final. Some people say it's got to be a single state, and the answer is it could be, but it doesn't have to be. It could be an immense monster. But it always has the property, you start in the on final state, you always reach a final state, and no matter what state you're in, any character can be read to get you to another final state. So that's pretty simple. Even a simpler way to do it is, remember there was a rule that says if something is regular, its complement is regular. So what's the complement of the automaton that accepts everything? And something accepts nothing. So now you look at this automaton and it says, is there a path from the start state to any final state? If there is, there's a thing it accepts. Therefore, there's something that wouldn't have been accepted by its complement. If there's no path to a final state, maybe because there isn't a final state, or who knows why, or the final state's somehow detached. We never really had a rule that said every state had to be reachable. Kind of makes sense, but there's no reason why I couldn't create something like this. I haven't before because it doesn't make sense. But here would be a situation where there's a final state, but it's not reachable because the arrow is going in the wrong direction. As you might imagine, there are ways to clean up automatons as if there's an unreachable state, throw it away. But we haven't required that. And this is an automaton, not a terribly useful one. But this would be the one where a situation... does this accept any string? The answer is no, because I'd have to be able to get to a final state in. The only final state is here, and there's no in path to it. So the answer is no. So you can do it either way, but it really amounts to the same thing. And how many points did I get for that? Oh, 17. That's pretty generous. So it was a real easy one if you saw the answer, but some people try to make way more out of it than imagine. Absolutely. Yeah, I think I'd probably accept that. As I said, you didn't have to have a single state, but you're right, the extra states are pretty useless. Remember, the rule was final states can be combined together. If they have the property, they all behave the same way. That means they have to have a transition for the same character and to the same state. So in this case, the combined states would always go to the combined states under every character. So absolutely right. You'd end up with a single state that kind of had arrows, you know, it's kind of like the black hole of automata. You get to the final state and everything draws you back. What they call it, a great attractor or something like that, if situation there, so...
Yeah.
Right.
Enumerate all the strings.
Right. And the argument would be just what you said on a state-by-state basis. Is it the fact I start in a final state, therefore lambda is accepted? And is it the case that each valid character takes me to another final state? If it does each character take me to another final state? And just check them off. Once I know a state has the property, it's accepting and has transitions. I never have to go back to it. So it's a finite process. It has to be. Yeah. If you had an infinite, again, if it's a finite state automaton and you had an infinite number of characters, there'd be no way to write it down and test it. So yeah, the finiteness is always something that's required in there, and even put it in its name. Yes? Okay, since we have it up there, why not? This is another easy one, and again, I must have been feeling benign when I was writing that particular exam, or maybe it was the last question, I needed one more question, so I said, I'm going to do an easy one and get out of here. But this one, the insight is, if I happen to have n states, right, that's right, and I know it accepts a string of at least n characters. If you think about going through the automaton, an automaton, each time you read a character, you either visit a new state or a state that's already been visited. And I could kind of check them off. Read one character in this n character sequence, check it, check it, check it, check it. But if I read n characters, I have to visit n plus one states. But there aren't n plus one different states, there's only n states, so I have to repeat a state. When I repeat a state, that's a cycle. This is a deterministic automaton, so it doesn't have any lambdas. So in that particular case, I've got a cycle. And once I have the cycle, I can read as many characters as I wanted. So I could have said instead of 2n, I could have said n plus 1 or n plus 2, but I thought I'd maybe trick somebody, 2n, oh, gee, you know, that's a doubling effect, look for something like that, but it's not. It's just that once you have a cycle, you can go ahead and accept as many characters as you want. In fact, the mathematicians, anybody who's ex-mathematician, they used to have something called the pumping lemma, I believe it's called. You said pumping lemma, and I took the class way back when. They even had it back then. And the pumping lemma is kind of like pumping on a well or something. The more you pump, the more water you get up here. And once you got a cycle, you can generate. It's more precise than what I just said, but you can generate longer and longer and longer strings. And that's how finite automata are able to accept arbitrarily large infinite sets, by the fact that they cycle. But the mere fact they cycle means you can characterize what the strings look like to some extent. And that's what the pumping lemma really does. Yeah, and then, namely, again, it says I've got n characters and n states. But if you think about it, whenever I read a character, I have to visit two states, where I came from and where I go to. So I just start at the start state, I'm there from the beginning, check it off, read the first character, check it, check it, check it, check it, until I've read all n characters. In this particular case, I must have revisited a state and given it a second check, because I run out of fresh states. But that means I had a cycle. I was there before, and I read some characters, and it got me back. And there's no lambda, so it had to be at least one character long. So I can read n plus 1, n plus 2, and eventually, of course, I'll get to 2n. That's deep mathematics, but I thought I'd impress people by how far we could go. And then 4, and then 3. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's one thing. Remember, I was talking earlier, there's variations. Remember, I did the delete the very first, delete the very last. And the question is, how do I go about deleting somebody in the middle? And in this particular case, you're going to love this one. I mean, situation there. Or maybe not. See if you're a mathematician at heart. So it's the same sort of trick, remember, we had, is that we've got to have an automaton that I give you for R, either regular expression or automaton. But it'll be an automaton. Now, I've got to somehow... Well, in this case, I don't have anything up there yet, so. What we're going to do is create an automaton, and let's do it again. Maybe something like that. And what we're going to do is we're going to create two of these beasts. And what's going to happen is we want to hear and we want to delete exactly one character. We've already done that for the first character. We went from the start state to the character that would be to the states that would be read one character later. We did it for the last character. We found all the states that were one transition away from a final state. So what we do in this particular case is for each state in the top copy, we'll create a lambda transition to the state it would reach reading one more character. And that's going to be the deleted character. So in this particular case, if this guy wanted to delete a character, he would have a lambda to this guy. And that guy. And what we're going to do is make all the final states in the top automaton non-final, which means you've got to take a lambda, but only one of them. Similarly here, this guy, if he wants to skip the character, he would go to his cognate down there or one later, and it's getting a little ugly, I'm sorry. But you're starting to get the flavor of it, is that in each and every state up top, I get a chance to delete one character. I don't know which one, so I'm going to anticipate them all. And the way I do it is by having a lambda transition from my state to a state in the bottom automaton that will be reached by reading one more character, be the first, the last, or somewhere in the middle. And the only final states are in the bottom automaton. So the only way to accept something is to work my way through the original automaton, but at one and only one place, skip a character. I skip a character by doing a lambda rather than a regular character read. So if this guy would have gone from here to here, he can now go via lambda to that second state. And again, you need a little prettier diagram, just off the top of my head, to make it all understandable. But that is the intent of how to solve it.
Does this prove that, or is it just
an example? No, it's proof by construction, because there's no assumptions about the exact structure here. This works for any automata. I say, give me the automaton. I don't care what it is. I drew something just for a talking point. I made two copies of it. I can certainly do that. Each state up top, I can say, what states can I reach by reading one more character? I take those states I can reach and create a lambda from the top state down to the cognate below. So by reading that lambda, I simulate what the automaton would have done by reading one more character, but I deleted it, but only one. And notice all the lambdas go down from the top automaton to the bottom one, so I can only delete once. It's like having a pistol with one shot. You better make the shot count. So after you shoot it, you're done for. I can't stop up top because there are no more final states up top, so I got to go below. And I can't go to the bottom final states without doing one delete. So by construction, this generalizes the two examples I showed earlier, the one where I deleted the first character or the one where I deleted the last character. Now I can delete either of those or somebody in the middle, but only once. But it's still exactly the same notion. Normally in these things, did we exclude lambda? I should have said in there, but it's got to exclude lambda in there because... That's sloppiness on my part. The original can't have lambda, just like my homework couldn't have lambdas, because it wouldn't make sense. Oh, yeah, no, and I wasn't as stupid as I feared. At the last line says, let R be any regular set does not include lambda. So I excluded that. So you don't have to worry about deleting a character out of lambda. So, good, my sanity was preserved. Now, we could argue what it meant, but I didn't want to get too much into detail. So this is just a generalization of the other ones. And remember, the trick is always find a state you're in, find a successor you would reach by one more character, and put a lambda in there to simulate deletion. In the simpler examples, it was always the very first character or the very last character. Now we generalized it to any character. But it's still the same flavor. You go one state further, but now you go it on lambda rather than on character. So therefore, you delete one character, but only one. And there's no restriction on where it is. You can chug along as long as you want in the top automaton, but you can never stop in the top automaton. So at some point you say, got to delete, follow the lambda, finish it up in the bottom one, and bingo, you're done. So it's a proof by construction. The argument being that what must this thing do? It must essentially take the same path it would have in the original automaton, with the exception that one transition that used to be under a character is now under lambda. There's no constraint on where it is, so it has the effect of deleting one character anywhere, first, second, third, last. And that's the argument. So it's not certainly a fully mathematical argument, but proofs by construction are sort of look at it and it has to work. Yeah? Yes. Yes. And same exact states. Right. Which, let me redo it on a clean page so that it's a little easier to do it. Yeah. Right. So what's going to happen is I take any automaton at all, and let's make this a tad easier just so that I don't get... So that's the original one that you give me. It's simple because I have a simple example, but you give me as complex a one as you want. Lots of states, lots of transitions. And yes, I make an exact copy down below. And I can certainly do that. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. This one, the man's quite correct. I should delete that part of it, yes. Only one start state. And at this particular stage, I start in the top state, and I say, for each state that has a successor, and in this case, they all have successors, I give a lambda transition to the corresponding state below that would have been the target. So this guy could go along the top transition to here, so now he can go to lambda there. He could also have gone to the bottom accepting state, so I put a lambda there. This top guy here could go to the bottom, so I put a lambda there. And he could go to himself to a lambda, so I put a lambda there. And I make the top automaton have no final states. So again, the construction now, as was pointed out, I got to start at the top. I have to finish in the bottom. And any path I take is exactly the same as I would have in the original automaton, with the exception that one transition under a character has been replaced by a transition under lambda, which is the effect of deleting one character. But unlike the earlier ones, I didn't specify where it was going to be. Yeah. With a little explanation, of course. Yeah. I mean, the things I would want to see is make two copies. Yeah. You have to start in the top, so the start state's only in the top one. You have to finish in the bottom, so only final state's in the bottom. And you add these particular transitions that have the property of anticipating one deleted character by going from a state to a target state, but not under a character, but under lambda. Yeah, right. And then the situation. And then your argument is, why is this valid? Well, it simulates a path through R with the exception that one transition that would have read a character has replaced by lambda. But that's, of course, the same as deleting that one character. But only one, but anywhere. It could have been the first state, the last state, anything. So now you anticipate any of those. And again, if this looks screwy, notice this thing would be great if you were looking for something that had, for example, doing some spelling correction. Particularly at occasion, you know, where you have long words or something, sometimes people misspell. This anticipates one variation of errors, namely, you dropped a character. And I've certainly done that. Think of it as in terms of not just reserved words, but things where you have various commands. I don't know, do your products now, do they have commands, keyboard type things, or are they all touch icons or so on? But certainly in the old days, we had to type various commands. You can imagine if the commands are non-trivial, misspellings are a possibility. And this is one way you could anticipate that and say, here's something that accepts. If it doesn't look like it's valid, let's see if it could be one character deletion on a valid character. And here's the things that accept various tokens and say, yeah, this is begin with one character deleted.
So far, when we talk about lambda,
we're
talking about the ability to go from one state to the other without reading anything.
Right.
But here we're kind of overloading and saying, well, we're reading, but it can
No. Actually, we're deleting. I'm situation. We're reading the set of strings with deletion already occurred. It's not the case we're reading the original thing. Just think of it again as the misspelling. If the guy spelled it right, we're not even here. It says, no, we got something. It's, I can't make any sense out of it. This is not a reserved word. It is not something in the symbol table. But maybe it's something that's one character away. Now, of course, you could run a program and simply say, here are all the ways I could systematically delete one character. But here you could have an automaton that does it for you without even running loops or something. It's kind of built into the automaton. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes, you can. Structural induction, in fact. But it gets nastier because there's more choices. You've got to worry about, you know, what if I had a humongous nested thing? It's got a star up top, and inside there it's got a plus, and it's got some ors, and it's got some lambdas. Notice I said it does not accept lambda. It does not mean there couldn't be lambdas hidden deep in the bowels of the expression. So yes, it's doable, but now you have to say, let's look at the top level. If it's an or, do this, and subdivide it into two or more components of the or. And that will process them. So you have to kind of carry deletion down component-wise. It's doable, but it's nastier. What makes this work so nice is, no matter how complex the expression is, it's just states and transitions, two things to worry about. And if you had a really nested thing, you can just imagine, you know, where I have five or six levels of parentheses and stars and pluses and ors and lambdas and all that, you've got to be able to have an argument that handles any and all of those. Yes, and in fact, it is doable, and anybody who's an expert mathematician probably could do it well. But I think this is easier to answer and easier to understand. You don't look convinced, but I've tried it a couple of times, and I, except for simple ones, it got nasty. Okay, maybe you've seen it a great way, and that way I'll be able to have a new question next time I teach the class. Right. Because when I say, let this be any regular set, you say, okay, fine, regular sets are definable by either regular expressions or automata. I'll choose automata because that's what I'm more comfortable with. And I'll just let you write it down. I don't know how complex it is, but I know it has a start state, it has final states, and it has transitions. I've made any assumptions beyond that. If I have one of them, I can have two of them. And I can look at the automata and derive certain properties, like if I'm in this state, which states could I reach by reading one more character? And I just, in that case, add lambdas. So the construction works for anything you give me, simple, hard. If it's 100 states, it'll be tedious, but the same argument will be there. I then argue, what does my construction do? It follows precisely a path in the original automaton, except for one difference. At one point and one point only, I go from a state to a successor state that would have been reached by reading a character, and I put lambda instead. That has the effect of deleting exactly one character, which is what my definition wanted. And the construction does not have any limitation on where that character is. It could be the very first out of the start state, the very last just before I hit a final state, or somewhere in the middle. So the proof is that it's doing R except for the perturbation. And the perturbation is one character was replaced by lambda, which is the effect of deleting one character.
Right, I guess I think it almost sounds like we're basically saying that if I can, you know, one regular set, this is true of one regular set.
You get there by the only difference in regular sets with the automata view is how big and complex it is. As long as your rules do not discriminate against any particular structure and situation. When I get in trouble grading is I say, let it be my choice, and you pick out one that's so simple that it does not generalize. No, a tiny one. For a couple of cases, for example, someone took sigma, the sigma plus, all characters plus, the universal set that matches anything and everything. Well, that's cool, but what does that have to do with some other set that I might be more interested in? This thing, I just drew up the states, but there was no particular requirement. I'll let you draw one, and I'll do the same construction. Whatever it is, it has the effect of reading part of the string in the top state, anticipating a deletion, dropping down to a successor state, and then finishing in the bottom. And clearly, except for that one lambda transition, it's the same string, because the path is the same in the top transitioning to the bottom. So my argument is it accepted a string in R except for changing one character to lambda, and I was able to do it any place I wanted, and that was the definition that I started with. Sure. Have we got this one played out? I think we probably have. Everybody's gotten a chance to ask a question, so. Oops, meant to sleep. I'm glad everybody's willing to ask questions. One of the difficulties when teaching undergraduates is nobody wants to ask a question where they're afraid that they're going to look stupid. And, oh, I asked a dumb question. He's going to know I'm dumb and the situation you're in. And that's just so backwards that. I think you've probably all figured out now, if you don't ask, you don't find out, and if you don't find out, you're likely not to get it right. So we're getting out of this guy. And that guy. And which one were you going to?
The spring 2008, number 2.
Oh, that's right, I got to do the magic thing. Yeah, it'll come back in a moment. This thing sort of reminds me of, you see old movies where a guy had a Model T or something, and to start the thing, you gotta churn it, and the thing won't start, and you just kick it somewhere, and it starts. Well, this guy, you've got to pull the plug out and put it back in, and voila, it comes back to life. So, okay, that's fine. Okay, double, that's number 2. And it turns out that this and there are other variations is a disguised form of the old matching brackets problem.
So when it says, is double a regular set, why? It,
yeah.
Like why?
Right. And let me get into detail. That's just motivation of what it was. Sometimes I have to disguise something a little bit to get it past you, if I can. So the way to do these is you say, hey, I think maybe this is, he's just taking the old matching brackets problem and rephrasing it in some way or form. So double was the case that I had to have two segments that were exactly the same structure. So W, yeah, so the strings always had to be of the form WW, so two exact copies. So what I'll do is I'll take a special form of these guys, namely something in the form A, and a B. So my W will always be in the form some number of A's and a B. Why? Well, if I can show that it doesn't work for this one, it doesn't work for all of them. So this is a proof by showing you if one double isn't recognizable, forget about the others. Even it worked for every other last one. One failure is enough. So this is, you know, very harsh environment here. One failure and you're out, I guess. You're allowed to make one failure here before you get fired, I hope. No, don't ever admit to it. So it would be, do something like this. So this would be in W, because I have four A's and a B, four A's and a B, and that's double. But notice if I mess up the number of A's on the left or the right, it's not going to be in the form of double, because in the one of it, the B has to be at the end, and if the B is not at the appropriate spot, the lengths will be different. So how do I prove this? I do exactly the same thing as I did with the balanced brackets. I feed it ever larger strings of the form, some number of A's, B, same number of A's, B, and count the states I visit, or record the states I visit as I read. So in this case, I say I read 1A, I was in state 7, let's say. So 1A corresponds to 7, 2A's correspond to S11. And again, those are not the exact numbers, just, you know, running example. And as I give it more and more A's, this is a finite automaton. So I'm going to run out of fresh states. So at some point, perhaps at state 13, I'll revisit state 11. And I don't know it's going to be that exact count, but if I give it more and more A's, I'm eventually going to have to repeat a state. And now you can see the thing I've got. Namely, in this case, I knew A squared B, A squared B. where squared means repetition, like it does in mathematics, would be accepted. But since 2 and 13 get to the same, I say A13B, A squared B, must also be accepted. Why? Because accepting 2 A's gets me to 11, 13 A's gets me to 11. And after that, you know, it's just in the top state, B, it should be accepted, and therefore it'll have to be accepted in the bottom. But notice this guy is not of the form W because the B is not in the right place. It's a situation here, this is not symmetric, and there's no partitioning that's going to give me a W because there's only two Bs. If this one is at the last end, it's got to be at the very end of that W. That B's got to be at the very end of the prefix W, but W's, of course, have to be the same length, and 13 and 2 are not the same length. So it's a disguised version of that, and even if that's the only one it fails on, that's enough. This is a W, or a WW, a double, and if it doesn't match this guy, who cares if it's worse than every other one? You know it doesn't, but it doesn't matter. One proof of failure is enough. So guys in quality assurance know all about that, right? I talk to people that are in quality assurance, and they enjoy tearing into those products. Right. It's perhaps my poor way of saying that S has to be of the form WW. That if I look at S, I can write it in the form of WW where those are the initial and tailing halves of the string. That was my intent. If that's mathematically imprecise or incorrect, I apologize. Now, again, we're still number two, right? Oh, yeah, that's the vertical bar. That's the such that. This is the set of all things such that the following condition holds. So the set of all S is such that S is representable as a pair of consecutive identical strings. And again, if you see that in an exam and you're not sure what it means, by all means ask. That's certainly, it's very fair to ask, just tell me what this notation is trying to say. I tried to say it in English, but if you're uncomfortable with it, before you go down a wrong path. I can't think of any that's easier. It's situated, but again, it's no different than the square bracket argument, which is really not that bad. It's really the situation. What it amounts to is you're showing that the automaton is going to have to remember an arbitrarily large amount of information before it processes it. Think of it this way. Maybe this is easier. Is that, first of all, is it valid for me to look at strings like that? And the answer is yes, because they do form the WW form. Namely, lots of A's, a B, same number of A's, and a second B. So it's fair to say, let's target in on this particular kind of string. Why? Because I felt like it, but it should be handled. So that situation. And again, your intuition has to be, what this thing is asking me to do is remember how many A's I've seen before I can see the matching A's. So in this case, before I ever get to the B, I have to be able to remember how many A's I have. Now, in the case of a situation where we did binary numbers that were divisible by 3, I was able to reduce it. But this argument is saying that doesn't work in this case because before I ever get to a B, I'm going to repeat a state. In the case of divisible by 3, we repeated a state a lot, but it was always the case that one string and a longer string had an identical property, namely the remainder was 0, 1, or 2. But this has no such property. All it is a count. And as my length gets longer and longer, I can't remember a count by saying I'm in this state when the count is 7, I'm in that count state when the count is 8, etc. So I'm going to revisit a state and lose the count. And that's enough to show that the construction fails. And I made no assumptions at all about the expressions of the automaton other than they existed. And I showed that if they existed, something bad has to happen. So that's the simplest way I know to prove it. Does any mathematician guy know a better way? You can use that as intuition, but then you kind of have to convince me. I mean, you just made the claim it has to be identical. What if I say, no, it doesn't? In this case, I said in this situation that I lose the count, but I showed you what bad things happen when I lost the count. That if you set up the context and showing, you know, what these states represent. Remember, I had this little table here. And the key point was not so much S11. It's that two different counts got me to the same state. And if you want to be real mathematician, like I could say I and J, where I does not equal to J. But, you know, that would really impress me. But it's situation. Yes, intuition is fine. But remember, a lot of people got messed up on question four on the homework with the intuition was the number is going to be arbitrarily large, which was true. And I can't possibly remember the whole number, which is true. But I didn't have to because there was this backdoor way of saying, as I read the digits bit by bit, I didn't have to remember all of them. I had to remember just the remainder. And that turned out to be enough. Is there an analog here? I don't believe so. In situations, I get more and more A's. There's no case ever where two different lengths of A's are in some sense equivalent. I've set that up by the B's. It could be if I had a different set of characters, losing count may be something I could survive. But in this case, if I ever lose count between the left section and the right section of A's, the B's going to be in the wrong place. And that's going to be failure because there's only two B's, namely the one at the far right and the one that ought to be just a little bit to the left of dead center. You're not convinced that my hand waving, your hand waving is not as good as mine. And yeah. But I mean, really, I mean, if you read a textbook or something, it's not really hand waving. I'm trying to make it more approachable. This argument is proof by contradiction, which is very sound mathematics. And you can simply do the argument that as you do the table, there has to be a repetition. That's sound mathematics. Simply saying, as I read more and more A's, it's a finite automaton. A state must be revisited. There's no way around it. Don't care what the automaton is in terms of complexity. It's still finite. And finite means no matter how big it is, I can make something bigger. So that's not hand-waving. And immediately that I have this revisiting, I can show you two different strings, one of which must be accepted, but the other of which must be rejected. And yet, either they both are accepted or both rejected, which is a contradiction. That's good mathematics. A real mathematician would do it much more precisely than I'm doing it, but again, I'm the computer scientist who ran for the money. I didn't stay in there and take the glory of being a smart mathematician. I decided better to be not so smart, but richer, but not as rich as you folks, computer scientist. Yes. Yeah, it really, I mean, if you want to get into pumping theory type stuff and all that, pumping lemma type stuff, I mean, really, yes, there has to be a cycle because before I get to the B, if I read enough A's, there's going to be at some point where I have to repeat. And that does imply a cycle, and the cycle implies that I can have numerous different A counts that get me to the same state. And that's certainly enough to show that the definition can't work. The assumption that this accepts only exact copies of each other is not going to work. But notice that it's not just hand-waving and saying, oh, the number gets too big and I can't handle it. It shows that a bad thing happens as the number gets big and it leads to bad consequences. So there's solid mathematics behind it. Any math majors are ready to stone me yet? I know there's a couple back there. I guess they haven't stoned me yet, so I survived. Exactly. But notice that's not enough. We had cycles in the automaton that matched the binary numbers evenly divisible by 3 or exactly divisible by 3. So cycles aren't necessarily bad. Just in this case, the cycle leads to a consequence, namely that I effectively lose a count of how many A's I've seen, and that's enough to cause me to accept an unbalanced string, a string that is not... So that is not an exact copy. So that was our second segment. Let's take another little break. And at 8, we'll either do more questions and either that or we'll talk a little bit about the remaining topic, which is type checking.